The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition, a hump day edition of Analyze This here on 93.1 FM WTJX, your NPR station here in the U.S. Virgin Islands. My name is Neville James, and we got a great show lined up today. Hour number one, we're going to be talking our environment. We're going to be joined by Mr. David Bond, who is here in the studio, and we got Frondell Gerard, who is on the line, and we're also going to be joined by Summer Sibley Brown as well. Hour number two, we're going to be talking about the LEAC. The Public Service Commission, they made a decision on Monday, and we're going to break that down and hopefully get some audience participation as well in that discussion. So we'll get right to it. I'll do the housekeeping at the top of hour number two. We got Mr. David Bond, Associate Director of the Center for Advancement of Public Action, joining us this morning. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Neville.
Okay, good. And Frondell Gerard, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Everything is good. And you representing yourself individually or there on behalf of CHANT?
We're CHANT. We're doing it as CHANT.
Okay, no, it's CHANT. Okay, good. Let me start with you, Frondell. How you been? How's everything?
Been good, been busy, been working hard with Dr. Bond to have our community respond to the community environmental survey that we've been doing, that we launched last week. It's been a good effort and getting a lot of responses and a lot of disturbing information that Dr. Bond can speak about more, but moving forward.
Okay. We'll delve into that. And Dr. Bond, good morning once again. You were part of a press conference a joint press conference held last week over there in Castle Coakley.
Yes, last Thursday, I was joined by Frondell and Summer Sibley Brown and Jen Valuse of C. And on Thursday, we launched a community impact survey that sort of asked the public to tell us what they knew of the impacts of the lime tree emissions over the past few months. And in the 5 days we've had that survey going, we've been sort of overwhelmed by the response we're getting from the community. We've also been outside grocery stores and other major sort of community gathering sites, talking to folks and getting folks to take the survey. The survey takes about 4 minutes. It's anonymous, and it just gathers insight into the environmental and health impacts that residents have been experiencing in the past few months.
And what's the preliminary findings?
They're very alarming. We are hearing stories of extensive impacts I think the things that some of us are already aware of cisterns being contaminated with an oily film, gardens being covered with an oily residue, of vegetable plants and fruit trees dying after being coated in a sort of film. But we're also hearing a number of very alarming stories about the health impacts that people have experienced. We're getting stories of children falling out of bed, gasping for air in the middle of the night, of parents feeling like they left the stove on because of the overwhelming smell of gas, of standing up to go check the stove and falling down flat on their face, of entire neighborhoods suffering severe headaches and vomiting episodes during the emissions events at Lime Tree. One of the striking things to me about what we're learning so far is so many of the people that have shared their experience with us have felt very alone in that experience. They've reached out for help, and many of those calls for help have gone unanswered. And they have come to feel very, very isolated and alone in their experience. And one of the things we're learning with the survey is how we might bring those folks together to recognize the real scale of what's happened to St. Croix in the past few months.
That's very interesting. Found out when we hear instances of Mr. Banjos articulated. Why weren't we hearing these before? Why are we only hearing them now as a result of the survey? Because you know that was pretty dire. What we're hearing.
Well, you know what we're aware of, especially those of us who lived it, is that you know there was severe impact, especially on the west northwest sector of St. Croix. But we're doing this, and we're moved to do this because there has been no comprehensive community survey done. There has been no, you know, door-to-door assessment done by any of the local government or, you know, offices or federal government. So it's our position that, you know, let's gather this data independently so that it can be put out to the public in an unbiased way. Bennington College is where the information is going. It's all secure. Those people that have chosen to give us their names and contact information, you know, may be contacted directly by Bennington staff or students working on the survey. But, you know, this is the first step at saying, you know, this is the information we've gathered. And one of the challenges that we're facing, because, you know, I've personally been standing outside of businesses in Frederickstead, you know, filling out the forms with people. And we're getting information that now we have to figure out how do we get services to some of these people. Because a lot of people, you know, they've been told, yes, there's oil in your cistern. Don't drink the water, but they're bathing in it, right? There are people that didn't know who to contact. There are people that, you know, have been seen and are waiting for some repair, you know, work, or apparently there's money being paid out to people so that then you can get your own roof and cistern clean, but they're waiting. So here we are, you know, possibly 2 months later, and folks are still using their cistern water for everything but drinking, and it's contaminated.
Well, you know,
and that's problematic.
Without a doubt, but you know, we read a number of different articles. As a matter of fact, you and I had a text message discussion back in March when we were discussing the Washington Post article when they claimed mm-hmm. that, they claimed it was raining oil on St. Croix, but I never heard of the extreme descriptions that Mr. Bond just mentioned. I mean, you would think that hell is going on in Prophet the way he just explained that.
Well, you know what? It's going on in Williams Delight, in Smithfield, mm-hmm. in Two Brothers.
No, but I'm talking about the falling off of bed and all that stuff. I mean, we read a number of different articles.
Hold on a second.
I'm not denying that the western two-thirds of the island definitely has been impacted over the years. Now, this was during Hess. I'm not denying that. I'm just speaking about what was just articulated. I had never heard that before. You know.
Well, nobody has sought out the information before. I mean, there's been no the only on the ground folks that has been checking neighborhoods in response to complaints is Lime Tree.
No, I'm not refuting that. All I'm saying is what Dr. Banjas, I mean David Banjas articulated, is scary. You know, when you're talking about the I think the three different things that he referenced there, with respect to falling off a bed. What was the next one, sir?
Yep.
You said three different things that they experienced.
I've heard it from several parents that they thought they left the gas on the stove.
Thought they left the gas on the stove.
Because the smell of natural gas was so strong in their house.
Yeah.
And they would stood up to go check the gas, the stove, and fell over, overwhelmed by the fumes.
Mm-hmm. And then there was something else you mentioned in addition to that. Waking up out of their sleep. Yeah. You said that the folks are waking up out of their sleep.
Yes.
We read all the articles, and the majority of the articles that we were reading, Frandell, had to do with the impact on roofs, the impact on the plants, unquestioned environmental impact and public health impact, because of the mist that was being emitted from the flares, as opposed to what was supposed to be gas. So all I'm saying is this is actually, based on what we're hearing from Mr. Bond, worse than we've been hearing and been reading. So there's negligence in the reporting here as well?
No, I think that what we saw, for example, in the first couple of Washington Post, if you go to the Inside Climate News articles, even the Reuters articles, the CNN article, they all speak about the gas. They mm-hmm. all speak about the smells and the odors. And the most, visible impact is oil. You can't see the damage, that was caused by the gas. You have to ask people very serious questions, and that's why maybe David can speak to the way that the survey is designed, so that it gathers that very specific information from the people that are filling it out. You get an answer to the question you ask.
And thank you, Frandell, for that. And to go back, we shouldn't be doing this survey. There should have been robust fence line monitoring at that plant that was monitoring emissions and detecting what exactly was being released by Lime Tree when there were explosions or chemical fires, when sulfurous emissions were being released, when various petrochemicals were coming out of that plant. The fact that the refinery refused to install and operate state-of-the-art fence line monitoring equipment borders on criminally negligent. Beyond that, there should have been a full investigation at the moment these events happened into the community. Folks should have been going door to door in these neighborhoods, collecting information from people and making sure those impacted had assistance adequate to help them clean their cisterns, clean their gardens, and document any health impacts. Those things did not happen. And it's because of that lack of oversight and lack of official responsibility to these problems that citizens have stepped up in organizing and conducting this community impact survey.
Was this a DPNR level on agency negligence, Frandell? In your opinion?
You know what? It's a combination. It's first, let's put the responsibility squarely where it belongs, which is on the refinery and the operators and owners of Lime Tree.
Mm-hmm.
They had a responsibility based on the consent decree that was, issued to Faventa that went and transferred with the purchase. It's DPNR's responsibility for the local monitoring and gathering of data. But once there are exigences and there are complaints, and you and I both know that people were all over, you know, social media, radio, everywhere complaining, then you've suddenly got, you know, a public health issue. So you've got the Department of Health, you've got the CDC, you've got the EPA, you know, so it's both a local and federal response that should have occurred. We know that at one point, VITIMA was, an emergency was declared and VITIMA was put in charge. So, you know, since then, you know, we haven't, nothing got stood up. You know, there was a call-in number that you could call to the Department of Health, and I think in May, the commissioner had indicated that, you know, over 300 people had called in. EPA set up a call-in, over 300 people called in there. He set up a call-in, and they got over 300. You know, there were places for people to call in, but then there's no reporting out from EPA or the Department of Health of, you know, what those calls consisted of and where they came from. And there was no mobilization of on the ground, door to door, you know, checking in affected communities. If you knew there was somebody, you know, at a certain place in WIM that was severely affected, then it stands to reason that, you know, you created a circle around that house and you go out and you check all of the houses until you get to a place where there's no impact. So it's a combined industry, local and federal government responsibility.
One of my greatest frustrations, or biggest frustration, is a year before the refinery was shuttered in 2012, there were heavy fines that were levied against Hovensa. There was also a $5 million fine that was actually paid to the local government. Of course, there was a $700 million infrastructure mandate. And of course, you know, subsequent to that, within a year, they shuttered the plant. And then we fast forward to 2018, when the Lemtree agreement was brought before us in the legislature. I happened to be in the legislature in both instances. And there was a mandate by the legislature, through legislation, for air quality monitors, simply because we didn't want to experience what we eventually experienced 3 years later, or 2.5 years later, because this was early 2021. And because we wanted to be consistent with what the EPA mandated 7 years before. So we're gonna get into that, because the first question is, how was the refinery restarted without the monitors being in place? We'll be back right after this. We got Mr. David Bond and Frandel Girard joining us as we speak about environmental impact here on the Big Island in St. Croix. We'll be right back.
By the United States Virgin Islands Office of Highway Safety. it's okay to laugh, even in the toughest times. Perhaps no one knows that better than veteran satirist Samantha Bee.
I think I watched a zombie movie and there were just like crowds of people in a stadium and I was like, look at all the people fleeing, flesh-eating zombies coming together as a crowd.
That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
On Point weekdays at 10 a.m.
And we are back here on Analyze This here on Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021. We got Ms. Frondelle Gerard on the line representing CHANT, and we've got Mr. David Bond, Associate Director of the Center of Advancement of Public Action. Mr. Rock, good morning once again.
Morning.
And good morning, Mr. Bond.
Morning.
Now, I just referenced January 26th, 2011, Department of Justice press release, where they stated, Hovensa LLC, owner of the second largest petroleum refinery in the United States, has agreed to pay $5.375 million in civil penalty and spend more than $700 million in new pollution controls to resolve Clean Air Act violations in St. Croix, U.S. Virgin Islands refinery. The Department of Justice and Environmental Protection Agency announced today. The settlement requires new and upgraded pollution controls, more stringent emission limits, and aggressive monitoring, leak detection, and repair practices to reduce emissions from refinery equipment and process units. So, we have a history that we're dealing with here, Frondelle, right? We can agree with that?
True, absolutely.
Okay, good. Now, subsequent to that, right, part of that agreement, the government of the U.S. Virgin Islands has joined in the settlement and will receive a portion of the civil penalty in addition. In addition, the company will set aside an additional $4.875 million for projects to benefit the environment of the U.S. Virgin Islands. The projects will be identified jointly by the U.S. Virgin Islands government and Hovensa in consultation with EPA. So it's not like Lime Tree, upon restarting, was not aware of the fact that there was negative history in the refinery, and that a primary concern for the federal government and the local government was protecting the level of emissions and making sure that the people living in the surrounding area, us here, Crucians here on St. Croix, would not be subjected to the harms of emissions. And here we are, where we had a new refinery in place, and I'm getting the impression that before getting the okay to restart the refinery, because the press release was issued on February 8, 2021, earlier this year, that they're restarting the refinery, that the due diligence was not done in terms of the local and federal entities to make sure that all of the protections that have been well documented prior to the plant being shuttering in 2012, and rightfully, you don't even need the 2012 shuttering or the 2011 rulings and orders and consent decrees. Just basic protection for people when you're dealing with a business of this magnitude that we know is environmentally sensitive, obviously didn't take place, Frondelle.
True. I mean, David might be able to dig a little deeper on what happened, but you have to understand that at one point, the EPA under the Trump administration was providing, concierge services to the industry and helping the industry. For years, there's been an effort to vacate the applicability of the consent decree. So the new operators did not come in fully embracing the consent decree guidelines. As a matter of fact, one of the very first things that that the EPA did was to, withdraw in I believe it was April, no, in December of 2020, the previous administration had issued a permit that a Clean Air Act plant-wide applicability limit that the refinery could operate based on production at the highest level that FEVENSA had, so that they would be able to have the emissions as if they were producing 500,000 gallons when they were only producing, 100 to 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
That permit was withdrawn in March, by March of 2021, by the EPA. So there have been a series of actions, but David, maybe you can speak to the applicability of that consent decree and the manner in which the refinery was able to, start in production in January.
Yeah.
Under, EPA guidelines.
Absolutely. And Neville, you're absolutely correct that this facility has a long history of environmental negligence. The consent decree that we mentioned identified just how far out of compliance that plant, the Hovensa plant at the time, was from environmental law. How it had been allowed to operate that far out of compliance with environmental law is a question that still stands. But what the consent decree identified is these are the basic things, investments you have to make, improvements you have to make to bring the refinery into compliance with environmental law and operate it in a way that's safe for the community. What did Hovensa do? It declared bankruptcy and sidestepped all of those. But the consent decree provides us a record of the kinds of investments and improvements that were necessary to bring that facility into compliance with environmental law. Now, as Frendel just went over, under the Trump administration, all of those required investments and improvements were sidestepped. Somehow the Trump administration brought out a magic wand and waved it and made that consent decree and those required investments and improvements disappear. And the refinery, the Lime Tree refinery, was brought online without having addressed those catastrophic failures in the infrastructure at the refinery. In some ways, it's no surprise what happened next. The refinery broke down in fairly spectacular fashion and at great cost to the community of St. Croix.
When you say broke down, at what point are you talking about? With Hovensa or Lime Tree?
With Lime Tree. And my understanding is that, a number of the oily discharge pipes, there is a, the refinery separates out the products that can be sold from those that cannot. And the pipelines that took the products that cannot be sold, the oily discharge, this is one of the key sites of investment that the consent decree requires. Those pipes had rusted and were full of holes and were leaking into the aquifer. My understanding is that Lime Tree did not fully replace and update all of those rusted and leaking pipes.
Well, I tried to get away from that type of my understanding approach because I heard to the contrary. I heard of the $3 billion. The over $3 billion that it cost them to actually reinvest into the restart, $1.2 billion specifically was for new equipment. So we could get into a back and forth. Now we try not to get into that type of approach here on this particular show.
So we don't need to get into the back and forth, but we can talk about the fence line monitoring.
No, but you
equipment.
Said my understanding. I'm speaking about my understanding. Yes. If something isn't if we aren't sure,
yes,
I would prefer that we not get into that speculative term because I've spoken to folks, and we've heard to the different. We have a call on the line.
I appreciate that. If I could say one thing, is that there was extensive monitoring of the contamination plume beneath the plant, and a lot of that monitoring equipment went offline. And so we don't have a good sense of whether that plume is getting worse or getting better. And I'll just point out that there's a gap of knowledge that is a real issue.
Well, I'm not inside the plant, so I'm not refuting what you're saying. I'm just saying that, you know, I don't really want to get into that because, you know, I don't want it to be a he say, she say type of thing. Because I've spoken to people and they've told me, as it starts right now, the primary and practically the only problem with the refinery is the coker, not necessarily the refinery itself. The coker is the issue. There's an apparatus issue with the coker. And I explained it in layman terms to the best of my ability yesterday. What is supposed to go into the flare is a gas, not fluid. And unfortunately, fluid got up in there, got up in the flares, and that was the mist that was being emitted and impacting our people here on St. Croix. So that was how it was explained to me. Okay? We got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller.
Yes, good morning, Neville.
How are you?
And good morning to your guests. I'm good. And, you know, the statement that you just made is why I'm calling, because with regards to the consent decree, that is not the case. And you're absolutely right. If you don't know, don't speculate. Because this is a serious matter that has impacted the lives of so many people on St. Croix. The government of the Virgin Islands, the EPA, and Lime Tree were discussing and have been in negotiations with regards to a modified consent decree. Mm-hmm. There were filings in the court, and the culmination of that modification is yet to be determined. So obviously, all the stakeholders involved did address the matters of this consent decree. It's a matter that's it's fluid right now. And I don't think it was, you know, that Mr. Bond, and I've been following Mr. Bond's articles. And yes, a lot of the things that he's investigated are true, but I just wanted to weigh in to say that, and I'm calling because I have been, I work for the PFA, and the PFA is charged with coordinating the government's role with regards to compliance for Lime Tree. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I do. So that's why I'm calling in to weigh in to clarify Mr. Bond's statement.
Well, hold on a second. Yes, you may, but hold on a second. I just wanted to lay down a foundation here, right? As it relates to the host of the show, right? I have stated, and Frandell has been on before, and you know, I want the public to know that no resident of St. Croix is in support of any entity, in this case, Lime Tree, irrespective of how much money they generate for us in the coffers of the government of the Virgin Islands, is in support of any anything environmentally toxic impacting the people of St. Croix and at large, the people of the Virgin Islands. That's number one. Number two, right? We also can't ignore the impact as it relates to financials, because as a government, we are in the business of generating taxes to meet our obligations. We're not doing that at the expense of public health, period. And the environment, you know, we stand there. We're trying to focus on if there's a happy medium that can satisfy everybody involved. And if not, then they can't operate. Plain and simple. And so I don't want the public to think that we're those of us who are participating in this discussion are at different ends of the spectrum, because we're not. We all live here. Our families have lived here for generations, and we want to protect everybody who is here. So I just wanted to lay that down. You had a question, Frandell?
For clarification, because my understanding is that modifications, based on the caller's input, that the parties were seeking to modify the consent decree.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, at the time of the startup, was Lime Tree in compliance with the consent decree given that the modifications had not been approved.
Carol, do you have any knowledge of this with respect to what are they waiting
for? No, because most of that was the EPA's responsibility. Mm-hmm. Now, how much of it they require, like I said, it's a fluid thing. And I don't know how much at the time with regards to the modification, how far along they were, but I could tell you the modification has not taken place yet. So our DPNR and EPA has a role in that regard.
Correct. Yes. Correct. In other words, Frandell and Carol and Mr. Ban, for those who are listening, are we of the proper understanding that the Department of Planning and Natural Resources is our de facto environmental protection agency here in the Virgin Islands?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You agree with that, Mr.
Absolutely.
Ban? That they are the one that plays our environmental protection role here in the Virgin Islands in principle?
In principle, yes.
Okay. Frandell, you good with that?
Well, yes.
Okay.
But, I mean, there's a but here, right? Because the consent decree was issued by EPA.
No, I'm not denying that part. I'm just speaking about structure. Okay. I'm just speaking about structure, right? From a structural standpoint, our local environmental protection for the people of the Virgin Islands is the Department of Planning and Natural Resources, right? We agree with that?
Correct.
Good. So we have a joint responsibility, federally and locally, through the Environmental Protection Association and on the federal level and on the local level, the Department of Planning and Natural Resources.
And Neville, if I can just say one detail, is that when there is an urgent risk to immediate public health,
mm-hmm.
the EPA has a mandate to step in.
Yes.
And that is part of what happened in what the EPA learned about the Hovensa plant in 2011 when there was a series of explosions and failures at the plant. The EPA saw an immediate threat to public health and stepped in. And that's also what's happened with Lime Tree in the past few months, where the EPA saw an immediate threat to public health that overrode that sort of DPNR local priority. And EPA stepped in to sort of take control of the situation.
Well, Carol, who's on the line, and myself, we've been local legislators, and we're aware of the fact that there isn't anything that we can do, anything that we're allowed to do locally, that should be in contravention of federal statutes or federal protocol. Correct, Carol?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. So,
correct.
Anything else, Carol?
I cannot say, just like Frandell and you know. We've been living here all our life.
Yes,
we don't
sir.
Know anything but St. Croix.
Yes, sir.
We've been living with this with an oil refinery, and we want the best for the people and the future of St. Croix. And with or without the refinery, our health is paramount.
Without a
you
doubt.
Know, it's paramount.
There'll be no sacrifice in that under any circumstance.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Carol. You got it. That's Carol Burke. We've been joined here by Summer. Hold on. We'll take a break because we're joined by Summer Sibley.
Okay.
We got one more segment. Summer Sibley, bro.
Okay.
And we got Frandell Gerard here from CHANT, David Bond, Associate Director of the Center for Advancement of Public Action, and of course, Summer Sibley Brown, the Good Food Coalition, has joined the chat. We'll be back right after this.
Labor means business. Join the Virgin Islands Department of Labor discussion and get tips to help take your employee skills to the next level. Labor market insights and employer resources. 9 a.m. on the last Tuesday of every month on Analyze This to find out the latest information. VI Department of Labor at www.vidol.gov. Register for VIEWS today to post job vacancies and hire interested applicants at www.vidolviews.org. Let labor work for you. At Bank of St. Croix, we provide the ability to bank anytime that fits your schedule. With in-person, online, and mobile app banking, you have access to your personal or business accounts anytime. Bank of St. Croix has two locations, one in Gallows Bay at 340-773-8500 and one in Peters Rest at 340-713-8500. Bank of St. Croix, bankofstcroix.com.
Hi, it's Rachel Martin. Lately, I've been broadcasting Morning Edition live from my basement. When social distancing started, my colleague Rolando got on his bicycle and brought me all the equipment that I needed to work from home. Making public radio is totally a team effort. And if you're one of the listeners who donate to this NPR station, you're part of the team. Thank you. Together, we keep NPR on air.
Please donate right now at WTJX.org.
And we are back here, analyze this, and you know, we got good conversation going on. Of course, we wish we weren't having this conversation. Had you know, the powers that be done what they should have done with respect to making sure that all of the compliance mandates were realized. Summer Sibley, Brown, good morning. How are you? Good to see you.
Good morning. I'm excited to be in the building.
Thank you for joining the chat. that's a term we don't use in. When in the sports realm, when a player just hanging out and all of a sudden they dunk the ball and they say, oh, that person has finally joined the chat. So
happy to join.
Put a microphone a little closer so we get direct communication. Some of you, along with Frandell, it isn't, y'all aren't just pointing fingers at what is wrong. You've been trying to focus on solutions and some options. Direction for us to exist, because notwithstanding the environmental impact with the lime tree issue, we still need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and look at ways for us to exist as a people. Because let's face it, whatever we want, it comes at a price. Talk about that and how we actually, you know, do multiple things on multiple levels to allow for us to exist.
So, first of all, thank you, everybody. Thank you out there in Radioland. Happy to be on Analyze This. Listen to some of the conversation, and I'm excited that we're in robust conversation around this issue. Our job has been, we signed up as civic organizations to collect health impact data. We held the town halls because we wanted to open the conversation about exactly what is happening and begin to dream a little bit about where we could go, but we can't do that without evidence. So when you reference walking and chewing gum at the same time, Neville, I think this is where we are. We have two issues with standing. We have economics and we have environment, and we need to be in a conversation about how they coexist in a way that is most beneficial to the people of St. Croix, and where the most Crujans and Virgin Islanders realize the benefit of whatever industry is on St. Croix. I also think you're absolutely correct. There is a price to pay with any decision, and this is why the evidence collected in the survey will help us figure out what is the impact, what is the price paid for some of the decisions made. I think this is about relationship. I think this is about relationship with any industry that is here on St. Croix. I think this is about voice. I think this is about helping people understand that we as a territory acknowledge something happened. We want to know the extent of what happened so that our leaders, the people working in different government agencies, have an additional tool to make decisions and craft inquiry by. And so it's really, this is a rock and a hard place, Neville, because sending people home, right? Like our territory, I was very sad this morning because there's a line that feels like we have to choose a paycheck or we have to choose people health, and the people who are impacted, like they feel invisible. And then the people who hear us saying, you know, a shutdown for 60 days was a good thing because certain people could breed, they're saying, I have children in school. I have a mortgage. I have responsibility. The refinery is filling a portion of our GDP. I can't imagine what it is to be a senator or a governor or somebody who those decisions rest with. But it is our reality. And so my hope is that we get as many surveys filled so we have the rawest, most neutral data to tell a story that people leaders can use to craft the new narrative. And if that is by some miracle, Lime Tree Bay gets to stay, here's data you need to know about from our perspective, who you impacted, and you could share your data and we could triangulate some data and make some decisions on how we monitor and care for fence line communities. If that's a community benefit agreement, if that is a fund, if that is a remediation project, whatever takes up this space has to understand that it's coming into a fragile community, hit by two hurricanes, suffered a pandemic, never had the resources necessary to build the proper infrastructure, and they have to come in with care and concern. And I'm not saying that this organization didn't, because I don't know them. I am saying as a citizen what I want.
Well, let me dovetail on that to Frandel. Because, you know, coming in here today, I said that I was going to look for the opportunity to ask this question, and so I'm going to ask it now since Summer has laid a good foundation. Mr. Rod, I'm going to call you Mr. Rocket. I want to be respectful, even though we communicate on a first name basis. Mr. Rod, let's, you know, look at other potential developments and the history on St. Croix. Let's talk hotel development, where that's clean air development, yet the same environmental entities find a reason to want to, you know, oppose that development. In other words, don't mess with my utopia. I like St. Croix, like how it is. How do we, I mean, at what point?
Well, I think that's simplistic. I think that when we look at hotel developments that have been proposed and did not receive approvals, and I think you'll agree with me that the biggest issue was always the Army Corps of Engineers, not. You know, the environmental community may have raised questions, but ultimately lack of permitting by the Army Corps of Engineers stopped some, you know, mega development.
No. I could make an argument.
But the reality,
no, hold on a second. Hold on a second, because I didn't really get to pose the question.
Let me finish.
But I didn't pose the question in total. That's why I want to stop, because I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. Right here is what I'm saying, because I could make an argument in concert with you, where I could say we've had hotel developers who come into the territory and they ain't got no money. You know, we ain't even got to use AC. So I'm being fair to everybody. But here is a question that I'm asking you. Right, we can't deny that there have been instances where the St. Croix Environmental Association. And they have a job to do to protect the environment. So I'm not knocking. I'm just speaking historically. There are certain parts of the island that they don't want to see developed simply because it impacts their quality of life, their peace and quiet. And you know, that's just a reality. So I'm asking a simple question. I'm asking a very basic question here. How do we balance economic development and incorporate environmental protection to allow for everybody within reason, to be comfortable? We got Tech Village Project. I'm a mercenary on behalf, I'm gonna give you a perfect example. I'm a mercenary on behalf of the RT Park. We got Tech Village Project down there, and it's a 27-acre project, of which 18 of it will remain agriculture. The other 9 acres will be for mixed-use development, teacher's hotel, what have you, to help fund the existence of the 18 acres of agricultural development within the scope of the project, and we still people complaining about a parking lot. I mean, when we had the William and Punch project down in Frederickstead, they were concerned about a road that Bud Hull had walked hundreds of years ago. I mean, they find every excuse to want to come against economic development. So us as local Virgin Islanders, how do we go about, you know, getting the development to get us in concert with where we are as a people in 2021.
Okay, so point of information, the objection to the move of the road was from local Virgin Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have to do is reimagine St. Croix. We are doing things the way we've done them based on our history for the last
50 years, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have an opportunity to reimagine. Do we want or need a 500-room hotel that has a massive footprint, or do we need 100-room
hotels? Correct.
Do we need? Should our tourism be about mass tourism, which all data indicates? You know, you hit a plateau and then you begin to decline, and the effects on the infrastructure, the environment, and the communities is detrimental. Or do you want a very targeted cultural heritage tourism that lines up with St. Croix being designated as a national heritage area, where we not only can magnify our natural environment, improve our built environment, and people travel here to become an experience, you know, what is our heritage and our culture. Do we look at high-tech industry that has small footprint, and how do we attract those industries? I mean, we are now in a position to write out what our future looks like. And when I say we, I mean the community, because for the first time in the process of, you know, having our town halls, participating in this community survey, which, by the way, we want to make sure as many people as possible fill out, that we, our voices are being heard, both locally and nationally, right? So, So how do we now amplify the voices of the people and allow the people to participate in the design of the future? We have this thinking about leaders telling us what to do, when in fact the best leaders are simply articulating what their constituency wants. And so now the constituency has the opportunity and the responsibility to inform the leadership.
But we've always had that ability to do it. We seem to only want to do things in crisis, and that's a concern.
I think in fairness that, you know, we live in a small community, and people standing up against, you know, industry, government, is really dangerous. You know, there are people out there wanting to know people's addresses when Lime Tree announced that they were shutting down. And I just want to remind people.
Addresses for
the
what?
The only reason.
Why would they want to know the address?
Because of the blame going on those people who have had the strength to stand up and question what's going on. But I think what we need to really be centered in is that there were a series of incidences that impacted the health and environment of the people of St. Croix, mm-hmm. right? And those incidences have been documented since February of 2021, and it is a series of incidences. So now that we are gathering information, and I really want us to get back to the survey, because whether you live in an area, I had the opportunity to talk to two brothers and get them both to fill out the survey. One brother lived in a neighborhood where he had no effect. And so his answers to everything was never, 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 right? His brother lived across a hill on the other side, on the south side of the island, and his responses were the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. So what we need to be able to do
But that's the importance of the survey, Frandel. That's the importance of the survey, because you need information and data in order to make rational and solid decisions.
Exactly.
I agree with that. I have no problem with that at all.
And so, you know, if, you know, folks can go to www.bevington.edu/limetree and fill it out. It takes about 4 minutes. And, you know, some of us will be out at various locations during the week and over the weekend, getting folks you know, because a lot of folks don't do internet and those kinds of things, where we have some paper surveys available for them to fill out. So the data is so important, so that we have all of this information that can be shared with the community first. You know, all of this data is going to be released publicly to the community first. We're not working with Lime Tree. We're not working with for the government. We're not working for any lawyers. This is about a community-driven initiative to get information to the community.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, you know, Summer touched on what we're dealing with here. She mentioned gross domestic product. Of course, I always say gross territorial product.
You know, GDP, I got you.
You know what I'm saying? So we go to that. And, you know, I'm glad that the survey is taking place, simply because this particular medium, you know, we're in the business of having something to document positions, not just opinions and gut feelings. We need to make sure that that's the case.
So go ahead. I wanted to add, because Neville, you talked about development, right? And one of the things I'm passionate about is sustainable development. One of the things we know is necessary, and you see, I look at this, you have a book on your desk, Vision 2040. Mm-hmm. That was an opportunity, and we see in here where people are looking for blue economies and green economies. And so I think the work that EDA did to engage over 1,000 people, when you're asking, what can we do to bring the right hotels here and the right, that people won't stand up against, right? That organizations won't have a problem with. I think we need to do more of that, more data collection. I think how we talk about a water and land use plan, we should have a economic development plan, which I think this is the beginning of, to say where we're, and merge that with a water and land use plan.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the land and water use plan, because the same environment, there's a component environmental community that don't want a land and water use plan, because it gonna make they believe it gonna undermine who could develop what where. And that's all part of the problem.
So these types of exercises, collecting data, right? Overwhelmingly, if we use collective civic engagement, then the small voices that have lots of money and the small communities that have loud voices because they have lots of money, and the large communities that have small voices because they have no money, begin to balance out, because we're making data-driven decisions, and then we have a tool of accountability. It's not what Summer feels like. The data says 50-60% of the population agrees that this area should be developed.
Yeah, and the data will also give us an example of like what Frandell gave us with the two brothers who don't live far from each other, separated by a hill, and dealing with two different realities. When we come back, we'll wrap up the conversation, because I want to give Mr. Bond a chance to say his final piece. We'll be right back with hour number two here on Analyze This.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.